Good morning. My name is Stephen. I'm one of the pastors here at High Rock. And for the past couple months, we have been looking at the kings of Israel. Why have we been doing that? Well, it may seem like there's a great distance between us and in our lives today and these kings, but they were actually a lot like us. Even though they seem so far distant in culture and context, the life of an opulent king who lived like 3,000 years ago in a completely different culture. But upon closer examination, the resemblance between our lives and the kings is actually quite remarkable in this way. You and I live in a world where so many of us can choose what we want to do. We can pursue what we want to pursue. We can consume what we want to consume. We can ignore what we want to ignore. We can sleep with who we want to sleep with. We can value what we want to value. We can reject what we want to reject. Now, throughout human history, and even most of the world today, this has not been the case for the vast majority of people, except for the powerful, the rich, the royalty. And in that way, our lives are indeed very much like the ancient kings. That's why we can live in a world where live your own truth and you do you are the religious mantras of our generation. You and I are able to live like kings and queens of our own lives. But as we've seen from our look at the kings of Israel, that can become very problematic very fast. Because though we may be kings and queens of our own lives, there is another king, a king above all kings that we just sang about, right? There is one and only one Lord of creation named Yahweh, and he has lovingly called his people to fall in line with his ways, his purposes, and his reign and rule. And yes, I know that that's where most of us check out, isn't it? Churches all over the Western world this morning are empty or close to empty because there's a world out there that says, I don't want to do things God's way. I don't want to fall in line. I want to do things my way. And that's pretty much the story of humanity right there. If we're really honest with ourselves, that's the story of our lives. Right? And that's the tension that many of us feel, especially those of us who are trying, we want to follow Jesus, and we feel this like, oh, here's my way, and here's the way of Jesus. So we reject God as king, and we crown ourselves king, okay? And so I'm going to do that this morning. I'm going to crown myself king. How do I look? I won't keep this on for too long. Now, here's the thing. I can't be alone, all right? Pastor Cindy, I need your help. Everybody gets a crown this morning, all right? Oh, thanks, Chris. Everybody gets a crown this morning because we are kings and queens of our own lives. I've got all kinds of different crowns here, too. If you're picky about the kind of crown that you wear, there's different crowns here. This one's kind of like a tiara. This one's kind of nice. If you want this one, here it is. All right. So we reject God as king, and we crown ourselves king. We have a little coronation for ourselves, probably when we're very young, and we say, I want what I want, and we make ourselves kings of our own lives. This is great, by the way. Yes, don't hesitate to put them on. I want to get some good pictures here. Okay, this is beautiful. All right. So, but now as we heard last week, all right, and I want you guys to see, I can take you all seriously, but you might not be able to take me seriously, so I'm gonna remove my king for just a moment. As we heard last week, when we crown ourselves king of our own lives, that can come with devastating consequences. And not only do we miss out on being close to a loving, compassionate God King who longs for us to flourish in life, but when we choose our own way, when we make ourselves kings and queens, instead of allowing God to be king, instead of the fullness of life, instead of human flourishing, we get brokenness beyond our wildest dreams. Last week, Pastor Cindy looked at the reign of King Manasseh, who she rightly called the worst of the worst. One king after another, we see they just throughout the generations of the kings of Israel and the kings of Judah, one king after another kept pursuing their own ways, grasping at what they desired, until it wasn't even just a matter of idol worship. Okay, that's kind of how it started. You know, Jeroboam was building like altars up to the high places and building these golden calves that people were worshiping but were saying, oh, this is the Lord our God. Solomon was bowing down to other idols. But after generations, it became more than just idol worship. Israel had become a place of radical injustice, the kind of injustice that rivaled even the pagan nations that dwelled in the land before them, and the kind of injustice that left countless innocent people murdered in Jerusalem under the reign of King Manasseh. The way of King Jesus leads to life, but the way of the kings who choose their own way leads to injustice. But we want abundance of life, do we not? Our way can only lead to injustice, pain, and death. And so we've seen this over and over again. This has been the pattern that we've seen with the kings, even with some of the best kings of Israel, even the best of the best. Last week we saw the worst of the worst, the best of the best that gets held up higher than any other is King David. But even with David, we saw the tendency for him to choose his own way. But this week I want to do something different. Instead of kind of taking a bad king or a good king and dialing in on the brokenness, as we now near the end, this is the last week in this sermon series, and this is nearing the end of the monarchy in the kingdom of Israel and the coming destruction that's been promised through the prophets for generations now at this point, what we see is a powerful glimmer of hope in a young man named Josiah. Josiah was the grandson of the evil king Manasseh, and his father Amon ruled only 2 years before he was assassinated by his own officials, leaving the kingdom of Judah to an 8-year-old kid. It's hard enough for most of us probably to imagine ruling a nation, all right? Most of us are just kind of happy ruling ourselves. Right? Try ruling a nation at age 8. All right? And so I'm just going to read again those first two verses that we just read. Josiah was 8 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 31 years. His mother's name was Jedidah, daughter of Adiah. She was from Boscath. Now, that's interesting. I'm going to get to this in a minute. But he, that is Josiah, did what was right in the eyes of the Lord and followed completely the ways of his father David, not turning aside to the right or to the left. Now, I want to pause there for a moment. We've seen this pattern with all the other kings of Israel and Judah. They all get one of two descriptions. They either get he did evil in the eyes of the Lord, or he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord. And very few kings did what was right in the eyes of the Lord. But here we have a boy king whose grandfather was the worst of the worst and whose father, in his short 2 years, was not that much better. But of Josiah, it says, he did what was right. And more than that, it goes on and it adds the honor of him being compared to his father David. Of course, it wasn't his father David. It was his great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather David. How is this possible? How, after having a grandfather and a father who didn't even know God, how could Josiah even know how to do what was right in the eyes of the Lord? Any ideas? There's a clue right there in the text. His mother. His mother's name was Jedidah, it says, daughter of Adiah. And she was from Boscath. That's just a lot of information that seems unnecessary in a short verse. And the text would not mention Josiah's mother. It wouldn't honor her in this way unless she had played a key role in raising him up to fear God. Somehow, this evil King Amon, Josiah's father, married himself a godly woman. And as a youth at age 16, it says, Josiah began to seek the Lord for himself. That's in the account of Josiah from 2 Chronicles. Now keep in mind that there had been two generations of kings preceding Josiah who had utterly rejected God. So Josiah's knowledge of who he was seeking was limited to whatever he could learn from his mother and perhaps some of the priests who served under him. But the ways of God were largely forgotten in Israel at that time. God had been forgotten. Can you even imagine a time like this when people actually forgot who God was?
Pastor, that's like right now in our world today.
That's the world that we're living in. Like, we're forgetting who God is. We're not too far off from that. We still have some cultural memory of Jesus and the church, and God's kingdom is moving forward still in beautiful ways. I sometimes like to think of us in the world today, in the church, in the Western world, as a remnant. We talked about that a couple weeks ago, and we talked about how God was trying to encourage, right, Elijah. And he said, hey, I've reserved these people for myself. I'd like to think that today God is reserving people for himself still here today. So we're still, I'd say, maybe about a generation away from God being completely forgotten in our culture. And I don't think that's going to happen because of you all right? But look at places like Western Europe and Australia where people don't even know who Jesus is. And these are cultures, mind you, where Jesus was taught for generations. Where now the name of Jesus is so twisted that it's a little more than like the butt of a joke or a strange historical figure that maybe meant something in a bygone era. People have forgotten God. That's the air that we breathe today. And downer alert, sorry, it's probably going to get worse before it gets better. When baby Josiah rose to the throne, things were at their worst. The people, the nation, had altogether forgotten who God was. You guys can take their crowns off if you want. If you want to keep them on, that's great. But hold on to them because we're going to need them later. Josiah lived in the midst of a spiritual desert, but he was seeking God. He knew David, the great king of the past, had served Yahweh, but he didn't know what to do. So he did the most basic thing that he could think of. He started going through Judah and dismantling the high places of worship. He's like, I don't know much about following God, but I know that if God is the God, then I need to start getting rid of those other gods. And so he starts doing that. It's like the most fundamental element of choosing God's way, isn't it? You don't really need a manual to know that if you're choosing to follow God, then you need to start getting rid of the other gods. And we'll talk more about that in a moment. But the other thing that Josiah started to do was he started to take care of the temple. Right? It's been generations now since Solomon built the temple, and it needs work. It's been neglected. It's been a house for idols and worship and all this other stuff. And he's like, so he starts working on the temple and bringing in, you heard it in the text, carpenters and masons and people to come in and start fixing up the temple. And one day when the workers, they're doing their work in the temple, they need to get paid. And so Josiah sent the priest, Hilkiah, into the temple to gather offerings that had been collected. And look at what happens. It says, Hilkiah, the high priest, said to Shaphan, the secretary, I've found the book of the law in the temple of the Lord. Now, I don't know if you can picture it well. We just had some kind of light refurbishment done here in our church, new carpets, new chairs. Adam's there in the back. Adam and I were in here so much, and we like leveled the whole stage. There used to be like these tiered things that didn't make a lot of sense for us right now. We refinished this wood. So we did a lot of work. Now imagine if at the end of all this work that we're doing here, you know, we're going around, we're looking here, it was a mess. You should have seen it. And the temple is probably a mess as they're working on stuff. Masons are doing their work, carpenters are doing their work. And I came in here all the time just to kind of check on the work and see how things were going. And, you know, I would look around back here. There was a huge hole back here from here to here. Adam, you know, put some wood back here. And I would come back in. I'd be like, oh, this is amazing, but it was such a mess. And it was a disaster. And what if I came back here and all of a sudden I'm like, huh, what is this? I've never seen this before. It says Bible on it. What's that? I take this thing, and it's dusty. It really was dusty. And I start reading. Of course, I can't read this because it's in Swedish. And I'm like, what in the world is this? I've never heard words like this. I've never heard God talked about like this. This is incredible. Can you imagine not knowing, never having seen a Bible before? Never having read the words of God before? Now, to somebody who really doesn't care about the words of God, you're like, whatever. But to somebody who's a seeker of truth, this is a big deal. This is a big deal. And they were so far removed from the days of David and the early days of Solomon when Yahweh worship was just at the center of their communal life together that they didn't even know. They didn't even know. It's like they found a buried treasure that they didn't even know existed. Hilkiah seems to know what it is. But his secretary doesn't have a clue. And he reads it. He reads it. And look at what he says in his report to the king. He says, Hilkiah, the priest, has given me a book. Not the book. Nope, he found a book. He says, he gave me a book. He's as ignorant of the importance and power of those words as many people are today. But look at what happens when he reads the book to the king. All right. And we know from the account in 2 Chronicles that Josiah was a seeker of God. It says he started seeking God at age 16. And so something powerful happens when a seeker of truth, a seeker of God, and if you're a seeker of truth, then you are a seeker of God because God is the truth that we seek, right? Whether you know that or not. And Josiah was seeking God. And something powerful happens when a seeker finds what they've been looking for. Look at what happens in verse 11. When the king heard the words of the book of the law, he tore his robes. I can't tell you how important these words are. When the king heard these words, he tore his robes. Josiah has been on his own truth-seeking journey. And that's the fundamental thing that I ask of any of you. Anybody who comes through these doors, that's the fundamental thing I hope for people who are outside these doors, is not that you have it all figured out, but that you might be a truth-seeker. Being a truth-seeker takes humility. It takes curiosity. It takes honesty to admit when ideals or lies that we've held onto are not true. And that's where Josiah has been. He's already had a posture of humility, so he's ready for whatever comes next. And when he comes face to face with the law of God for the first time, the instructions God has given for truly right human living, most scholars, by the way, agree that what he was being read to him was probably what we have in our Bibles is Deuteronomy. Okay? Now, for a number of different reasons, not least of which is the description that's given at the end of the Josiah account in chapter 23, verse 25. It says that neither before nor after Josiah was there a king like him who turned to the Lord as he did. Listen to how it describes him. With all his heart and with all his soul, and with all his strength. Those are words that come directly from Deuteronomy chapter 6. They also happen to be the same words of Jesus that Jesus calls the greatest commandment. So Josiah hears these words for the first time in his life. Up until this point, he's been seeking God without the benefit of God's instructions. And let me tell you, that's a lot of people in the world right now. There are curious, humble people who want to know, hey, there's a maker out there. I want to connect with that maker. They don't have a Bible. They don't know what's true. They don't know that his name is Jesus. But they want to know. They want to know. And that was Josiah. And now he has the benefit of instruction. Now he hears these words and immediately he's humbled. His robes are torn, which is a sign, an ancient sign of just like, I am humbling myself. I don't deserve these robes. I am not the king. He now knows more fully who Yahweh is. And most importantly, I think it's important for us to frame it in these terms. He knows that there's another king and he's not it. There's a higher king and he's not it. This is a king who has come face to face with a greater king, a truer king, the king. As several of us have been reading through the Bible in a year. Soon, those of us who are doing that, if we're on schedule, and I know many people aren't, and that's fine, but we'll be coming to the book of Deuteronomy. And my encouragement to those people or any of us here, it doesn't matter if you're not reading through the Bible in a year, my encouragement would be pick up the book of Deuteronomy and read it like you've never read it before. And maybe you haven't read it before, but put yourself in Josiah's robes for a moment, right? A seeker of truth encountering the character and the instruction of God for the first time. What would your response be? What would your response be? Now, your response depends on your posture, doesn't it? And Josiah had a contrite posture. The knees of his heart were bent, right? He was a truth seeker. I'm going to share, and we see some of the ways that Josiah goes on to respond throughout the rest of his reign as the king. And I'm going to share these with you, and then we're going to take some time to respond together. But the first thing is this. Josiah renewed the covenant. Now, the covenant had been broken for years. In fact, it had been broken so badly that even with this turnaround that Josiah is bringing about, the prophetess Huldah says, sorry, it's too late. Like, it's okay, Josiah, I'm honored by your humility before me. You're not going to see how awful it's going to get before you die. But it's going to get bad. Jerusalem's going to fall. The temple's going to burn. And the people are going to be taken away in exile. But Josiah is going to renew the covenant that's been broken. And the moment that we see there in 2 Kings chapter 23, this moment mirrors exactly what happened the first time that the Ten Commandments came down, right? It says in Exodus chapter 24, then he, that is Moses, took the book of the covenant and read it to the people. They responded, we will do everything the Lord has said, we will obey. They're saying, God, you're my king, and I'm going to follow you. I'm going to follow you. So Josiah is now echoing what happened some thousand years, more than a thousand years, probably like 1,700, 1,800 years before him, generations ago. Church, sometimes we need to simply stand before God and say, yes, yes, God, yes. Whatever the question is, whatever the ask is, the answer is yes. Yes, I will follow you. Yes, I will obey your ways. Yes, your ways are better than my ways. Yes, you are creator and I am created. That's what Josiah and the people are doing in this moment. They have been reintroduced to the God of their ancestors and they say yes. But it's hard to say yes when there are so many idols in our lives. What reason do people have to say yes to God, to covenant with God, promise to God, if we already have our own gods, right? Now, for the past couple of weeks, Pastor Cindy and I have tried to redefine what idol worship is. It's not what we so often think of. When we think of idol worship, we picture people bowing down before statues and pictures and things like that. Idol worship is placing higher value of anything above God. Everyone worships. All of us are worshipers. Our souls are created to worship. Everyone has an altar that they bow at. Pastor Louis Giglio, as we've said for the past few weeks, says, if you follow the trail of your time, your money, your allegiance, your affections, at the end of that trail will be a throne, and whoever or whatever is seated on that throne is the object of your worship. Josiah knew that the hearts of the people would be pulled away by the idols that surrounded them. So he did something that hadn't been done in generations. He had already started the process even before he read the Book of the Covenant. But now he just goes with gusto and he tears down the idols. And that's the second thing that we need to be able to do. Now, Josiah goes out and he doesn't just tear down some of them. No, he tears down all of them. All right, Josiah went on a tour of Judah, and he even went to what little was left of the northern kingdom. By this point in the history of Judah, the northern kingdom of Israel has already been gone. They've been lost to the Assyrian Empire. But he goes even to what was left of Israel, and he goes on an idol-smashing rampage. The text says that he ground the idols into powder. And he burned the powder. He scattered the idol powder over graves. He was cleaning house. And what I want to say to each of us, what I need to say to myself often, is that we need to clean house. There's house cleaning for us to do in our lives. What are the idols in your life? Maybe it's time to grind them into dust, smash them to bits, and burn them to ash, just like Josiah did. What's your idol? That's an important question for all of us. What is your idol? Maybe it's time for us to do some soul searching and say, God, what's getting more attention than you are in my life? It's probably something good, okay? A lot of times we get thrown off by thinking, like, what's the bad thing in my life that I have to get rid of? Maybe. Right? But it's probably something good. Most idols are. Romance, not a bad thing. But when it becomes the object of greatest worth in our lives, it consumes us. Money is not a bad thing. But what does Paul tell Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10? He said the love of money, not money, but the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Where does your affection lie? Sometimes our appetites can be the source of our idolatry. One of the biggest idols in my life is food. I don't crave food for nourishment like so many people in the world do. I crave food for pleasure. I can't wait for the next burrito bowl, the next Chick-fil-A spicy deluxe sandwich. I bow at the altar of my cravings. So what can you do? What can I do to tear down the idols in our lives? Maybe you need to lay off that dating site for a while. If you struggle with making an idol of money, go on a spending freeze, or perhaps even better yet, give money away. The best cure for the idol of money is generosity. We know this, but it's hard. We need to smash those idols. This Wednesday is the beginning of Lent. What can you fast from during the season of Lent to kind of reorder things in your life? I'm going to be fasting from comfort food this Lent. And that's like most of the food that I eat. I want to reestablish a healthy relationship with food and make space for God. What are ways that you can do that in your life? We need to clean house like Josiah. This Tuesday, before the beginning of Lent, we're going to worship here on Tuesday night. We're having a Vespers, which means evening worship service here. We haven't done that for a long, long time. So Mike's going to be leading us. We've invited folks from Antioch Church to come over and be a part of that with us. To worship our God. And not just go through the motions, not just kind of like sing the words on the screen, but like come with our hearts, bearing our hearts before God, saying, here you go, God. Here's me. Here's me. All right. So after Josiah humbled himself, he tore his robe, right? He reestablished the covenant. He tore down idols. And what's the third thing that we see there in the text? He reestablished the celebration of Passover. Passover celebration is the central identifying festival of God's people. And they had a lot of festivals, but this was so important to them. It stands as a reminder that they were chosen by God and they were rescued by God. But when Josiah became king, the people had forgotten this Passover celebration completely. So he's reading about, and Deuteronomy spells out a whole lot about the Passover celebration. He's reading, there's like, Passover celebration? What's that? Clearly, it's important. We should do this thing. They've forgotten the God that they're supposed to celebrate, right? They've forgotten who he is. And so Josiah's reintroduction of the Passover meal serves as a reminder of the kind of God that they serve, a God who saves, a God who is mighty, a God who does not forget his people. Today, we celebrate the Lord's Supper. In fact, every Sunday, we do that together, and we remember. This is why we do it. Remember that Jesus is our Passover meal. We partake in Holy Communion every Sunday because we never want to forget what our God has done for us. And don't think it can't or won't happen. We are a very forgetful people. I grieve for the people who just haven't returned. I don't hear from them. I don't see them in church. I call and they don't pick up, right? I grieve the people who haven't returned to our church community after all these many months of pandemic. And that's just 2 years, right? Not two generations. Our memories get iffy at best. Our spiritual muscles atrophy. And soon we can't even remember why we ever did the things that we did. We continue to meet together because we stubbornly refuse to forget what God has done, in the same way that God stubbornly refuses to forget his created people. In a few moments, we're going to go do just that. We're going to remember what God has done for us through his son, Jesus. But now, as we come to the end of this King of Kings sermon series, I want for us to be able to have our own Josiah moment. At the beginning of the message, I handed you guys some crowns. Here, I'll put mine back on. All right. And here's what I want for us to do, okay? A little assignment, but we're going to do it right here. There should be pens there in the chairs that are in front of you. There should be enough for everybody. And I want you to take that crown that I gave to you, and somewhere on the back, where it should be easier to write, I want you to write down those things that you feel might be idols in your life. Just between you and God, you don't need to put your name on it or anything, but what are those things that are coming between you and God? What are those things that you find yourself chasing and valuing? What are those things that kind of keep you from saying yes to God? If you have a hard time thinking of something, I'm just going to give you a little hint to get you started. For most of us, when we follow the trail of our time and our money, our allegiances, our affections, the object that we see seated on that throne of our hearts is ourselves. It's us. Most people are worshiping themselves. So many of us, if we're honest, might need to write down me in big letters on that crown. But Mike's going to play, and I'm just going to give you just a few minutes just to think about what could that thing be? could that thing be that might be standing between you and God, that might be that idol in your life that you might have been bending your knees to and maybe not even realizing it? So let's take those few moments and then I'll tell you what we're going to do next. The Apostle John, when he received his vision and wrote it down in the book that we call Revelation, it's this beautiful image that he saw and wrote down in Revelation chapter 4. It says this: the 24 elders are there in the midst of all this stuff that's going on. They're encountering God. It says the 24 elders fall down before him who sits in the throne, and worship him who lives forever and ever. And it says, they lay their crowns before the throne and say, you are worthy, our Lord and God, to receive glory and honor and power, for you created all things, and by your will they were created and have their being. So what I want us to do, and we're not just going to lay him down, we're going to like cast him down, like the hymn says, casting down their golden crowns, you know, holy, 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 very popular old hymn. We're going to come up and hopefully we can try and make this work here. I'm going to make a little bit of room here. And as we come up to partake in the Lord's Supper today, I want you to come when you're ready. And just take your crown, and before you partake in this meal, just throw it at the feet of the cross. Might not feel very dramatic, but allow that physical act, that motion, to be a part of us saying no to the charms and the good things of this world, and yes, God, you come first. Lay down our crowns. Lay down our crowns.